the basis of what I want to talk to you about is obviously to do with the sustainable farming scheme, the consultation. And Leslie Griffiths has stated or sort of prefaced the entire thing by saying, I'm just going to quote from her thing and ask you for comment. The urgency of the climate and nature emergency cannot be overstated. Its effects are impacting on our ecosystems, altering the very fabric of our world, and pose significant threats to our agricultural and food systems. Recognizing this, our focus on sustainable policies, innovative strategies, and collaborative efforts is paramount in mitigating the adverse effects of climate change while ensuring a resilient future for all. So that's what she says. And the inference there is that farming is playing some part, a detrimental part, in what she's called the climate emergency. So first of all, can I have your view, or sort of the wider campaign view of the evidence that's underpinning her prefacing her statement like that?
So for many years, since the 1980s, we've been in environmental type schemes. So all this has been government driven from the beginning. I look at what we do up here on this farm for 375 years. It's sustainable. You know, I see the first swallows coming in. I hear the first cuckoo. I don't see the nature depleted whales that I hear about. You know, the frog spawns on the mountain, the birds are singing, and you know, we can produce food in an environmentally friendly way. Yeah, there's problems, don't get me wrong, but we need to address them problems. But cheap food comes at a cost. And I think it's an easy way out to blame the farmers. And it has been for many mainstream media outlets, and for governments as well. And we've got the supermarkets price pushing on every Tom, Dick, and Harry that's producing anything in the UK. So enough is enough. And we start and, you know, fighting back against this draconian measures and you know, making sure we can produce food affordably, sustainably, seasonally, and in an environmentally friendly way for the consumer and the customer.
Perfect. So to sort of shrink it down to the bare minimum, how would you articulate the strategic campaign and the background to it and its end state?
Well, so the campaign started with a little WhatsApp letter that was given to me just over a month ago. I read it, thought it was very powerful. Then there was a meeting in Welshpool where 1,100 farmers turned up. And then exactly a week later, there was 3,300 in Carmarthen that turned up. And all three points were taken. The SFS, Sustainable Farming Scheme, TB, which is absolutely killing us, and NVZ. So they're the three points we want to address with our Welsh government, with our environmental minister. And we feel very strongly that we've been hard done by, especially by TB. And I think a lot of the, you know, the measures within the SFS needs to be looked at and readdressed. And the NVZ's going to put so many small farms out of business that keep a few cattle. Which is, it's wrong. You know, cattle are part of the whole ecosystems we've got. We need them for the manure to keep onto these uplands to keep the soil fertility flying.
Okay, and there was a gathering in Cardiff last Wednesday, 28th, but from what I understand, nobody came out of the Senate to actually deal with anybody there. With that
No,
in mind,
they did come
they
out.
did. All right, okay.
So we had 4 a.m. speaking, and quite a few a.m.s came out. We had two, I think, Labour a.m.s standing in the wings. They didn't come out to talk to, you know, the group that were the speakers. They just kept in the wings for some reason.
Okay, and so on that, do you feel that you have the liaison that you need, or indeed the sort of levers of power with which to manipulate the situation in your favour?
At this moment in time, we feel frustrated. You know, there's a few people had the opportunity to speak with them. The unions, both sides, FUWN and FU, are pushing our voices. We're still in a consultation, don't forget. But when you have a First Minister that says, farmers aren't telling me where to spend this money, you know, things like that don't help the situation. And I believe, you know, three things that he said. The second thing that he said was, well, farmers voted for Brexit. So, he's blaming us for Brexit plus the situation we're in. Well, I was a Remainer. I never did vote for Brexit. And many other farmers and across the board, the average would be quite similar, I should think. And we have to take the majority role. And another one he said when he came into the school in North Wales that a certain person asked him, oh, so you were held up by the tractors? And he said, yeah, the farmers have got nothing better to do. So they're 3 points that have really, not helped the cause. As somebody in his position, he shouldn't use that language. He's pouring petrol on the fire and he should know better.
And do you envisage at all a situation in which farming could be conducted without subsidy?
Yeah, there is opportunities, but we have to have a fair price for what we're producing, and that's going to cost you, the consumer and the customer, a lot more. So the food that we produce would have to at least double and maybe triple in some places. So that's the thing. And who will suffer? The poorer. The poorer people within our communities will be the people that suffer. And this is where I think we have to get the message out there that, the CAP, the Common Agricultural Policy, was designed because people were going hungry in the UK, in Europe, after the war. So they designed that then for us to produce affordable food. So them subsidies that came to farmers were then subsidized to you as the general public because we were getting paid to produce food at affordable rates. And one stat that's kept in my head for a long time is every time a farmer is given £1 in Wales, £1 in Wales, he turns that into £9 within the local economy. So he goes down to his local warehouse to buy, a couple of gates where them gates will be fabricated by local welding firms, galvanizers, all these businesses from the feed to the fertilizer to the vets, to medicines, to all the people that rely on the farmer. Every single one of them are going to take a hit. So that £1 given to the farmer to produce nine, I think is one of the best investments any government could ever do.
Fair enough. And just to take that a little bit further, the relationship with the supermarkets, the groceries code adjudicator seems powerless and inactive. How are you able to affect change in the relationship with the supermarkets or distributors, or essentially anyone further up the food chain, as it were?
I think we have to look at policies that are set up in government as well. If we could have a policy within the government that, whatever something costs price production, that the farmer gets maybe 5 or 10 or 15% on top of that. Because when you've got farmers that are milking cows, and that price of production of milk per litre coming through things costing them 35 pence, and they're only getting 30 pence for the milk. Well, you don't have to be clever to understand that's not sustainable. And these are the things that government and supermarkets and the consumer have to understand because we are sleepwalking into food shortages. No doubt, no doubt. I've been saying it for a long time. We can see what's happening in Europe, the Netherlands, Germany, France, Spain, Poland. Now, the farmer is the last person on God's earth to go out to protest. I can tell you that now because they've got animals to feed, they've got crops to sow, and they've got things to do. They don't want to be out protesting. But when you're fighting for your livelihood and for your children's future, you'll do anything. And that's why we're seeing a desperate state across the world, literally, not just Europe. It's a worldwide problem. And I think we have to start to think there is something globally and turning against the people that feed the world.
And given that, specifically that pressure, and the consultation makes quite a lot of, or draws quite a lot of attention to soil health and that sort of thing, in particular, sort of reduction of chemical inputs into farming. What is there a sort of campaign view on that side of it?
Well, I don't disagree with some realms of that. I think soil health is the most important thing. We can use more regenerative ways, but we have to have a fair price for what we're producing. So, if they've opened the floodgates like Westminster have to the Australian trade deals, and then we're struggling and scraping, to produce different products without what they've got. And if you look, into the Ukraine and Poland, they don't have the legislations for some of the sprays out there. So they can still spray with stuff that we haven't been allowed to use in this country for 20 or 30 years. And they're able to produce, you know, that crop and then ship it into this country and then challenge us. So it has to be a playing field that's fair for everybody. So these are important issues that the consumer and the customer need to understand. And once we can get their message out there, and I think it is beginning to resonate, people are starting to ask questions and they're beginning to look at where the food comes from and how it's produced. And these are all important things because we can build a better Britain on our bellies with a farming food revolution. And, you know, if we look at the way that we're producing the food, and the nutrient density of that food, as in, you know, grass-fed beef and lamb, there's a heck of a lot of, you know, nutrients in that. And for me, that's what we should be pushing over onto the next generation. And if we can get them to change the way they eat, move them away from fast foods and processed foods, you know, that is going to save the NHS in the long run billions. Because we've got an obesity problem, we've got a diabetes problem in this country, and I do think a lot of this is down to dietary problems within the youngsters of today. So, you know, build a better Britain on our bellies by teaching the next generation what to eat, seasonal, good, healthy meats, and making sure that they understand the benefits of that, because the benefits is not just physical. I think the benefits would be massively mentally as well. There's a lot of depression. There's a lot of people that are feeling, you know, that there's not much of a future. But, you know, you get good food in you and you get out into the great outdoors and do something and find something, you know, and do some challenges. Wow, yeah, you feel like you've done something. So it's getting that balance, I think, out there.
I think that's a very strong message. And what I would say, I hope this you won't receive this as a criticism, but at the moment, I think I'm right in saying that a lot of stuff's being done under the No Farmers, No Food banner, which obviously has actually from without, having been set up by James Melville, I think, a non-farming Scot. Is that going to be the sort of the banner under which you continue to coalesce, or is there going to be a different framework?
I work with everybody and anybody. Okay. And I can speak with anybody and everybody. I think this is really important. So everything that was done on the Welsh protest had nothing to do with No Farmers, No Food. Okay. Because the banners are there. You know, if you go back onto my web page from 8 years ago, there's No Farmers, No Food, No Future. You know, because Mr. Melville, and I've been speaking to him quite a lot, he is a farmer's son from Scotland, so he does have a farming background and a farming connection. And all I can tell you is I speak as I find. He's been a gentleman with me, hasn't pushed anything. He has always just put the points over for the farming community. Look, any moment in time that I feel that's not serving me, I walk away from it. And he understands that. But I can't fault the man and the people around him. I think he's been very, very unlucky that he's sort of the figurehead there and people have been pointing at him. I'm trying to discredit him because, you know, it's like somebody's that's an alcoholic, you know, and he's come clean and everybody just go, well, he's just a bloody alcoholic. You know, he's just an alcoholic. You know, give the man a chance. Give the man a chance. Give the devil his due. And I think going forward, we'll have to work with a lot of people to find solutions. And there might not be people that will be of the same political belief or, you know, they'll have maybe a different mindset. But if we can't work collectively and we're looking for faults in every Tom, Dick and Harry, well, I think we might as well just go back to bed and forget it and just let government rule us in the way that they want. So well, for me, coming together, working with people, and listen, I'm going to disagree with a lot of them because I speak my mind. But if the aim and the main goal is to future-proof food production, the environment and farming in the UK, yeah, I'll work with anybody. Even if Donald Trump gets on the phone and asks me to have a chat with him.
What I want to be able to do is direct the public, direct the viewing audience to somewhere that they can follow what you're doing, support what you're doing, understand what you're doing, and if they are able to pitch in and, you know, offer trading relationships with farmers or who knows what. Yeah. Where do people go to do that?
Yeah, well, look, I have the biggest following in the world as a farmer on YouTube, with 2,100,000 and rising every week. 300,000 followers on Facebook. So everything, TikTok as well, Instagram, and I have a X account. So everything will be shared across these platforms. And, you know, I'm more than open for discussion. I've been using a lot of other people's videos, people sending me videos about their thoughts, their frustrations, you know, their children's frustrations. A lot of kids have been asking, will there be a future for us in Welsh agriculture and Welsh farming? You know, and these are quite poignant videos when you watch them. They're very powerful because you can see these kids out there pulling calves, out there milking, helping their mothers and fathers. That was the way I was brought up. You know, I wasn't university educated. You know, I just went to school. I didn't go that very often, to be honest with you. I'd much rather be home with my father. And, you know, my father's 87. He still works 7 days a week. He's still on the farm. Loves it. He's never had a passport. Never had a holiday. The only time he ever went away was with my mother for his honeymoon to the Isle of Man. That's the only holiday my father's ever had in his life. He has worked his whole life to produce food affordably, seasonally and sustainably for the general public, and he doesn't moan, but he is absolutely angry about some of the draconian measures that people are trying to bring on, you know, to the land that him and his forefathers have worked bloody hard to produce that food to feed people affordably. They want to plant trees on them, so we've got to address that. And I'm not against trees one bit. The right tree in the right place. Hedges and edges, and I think hedges and edges would be a lot better for the carbon sequestration and for, you know, nature and as in wildlife corridors. And we have to look at these dimensions within the agricultural sector, and some farms will be more open for it. Some farms will be more open to plant the odd tree here and there. I planted 40 trees last year on the farm, and they were all fruit trees. You know, and generations to come, they'll be going, oh, Gareth Wyn Jones planted that. Look, my grandfather or my great grandfather. That's the feeling that we should be getting. We should be leaving a legacy behind us. And I feel we have been portrayed as the bogeyman in a lot of situations. And it's time for change, because you will need a farmer once, twice, or three times every single day of your life.
Perfect. Okay, look, I know you're short of time. If you have got a sort of closing message for the UK column audience, then please do sort of, you know, have your say now. But the only other thing I would ask is kind of in relation to what you were just saying. In your dealings with the government and with industry, do I assume that within the, you know, the sort of the SFS consultation, rather than just rejecting it wholesale, you want to negotiate into a position that suits all parties?
Negotiation is part of the conversation, but if you're not in the room for that conversation, yeah, it's never going to happen. So, you know, the consultation now is up there. But when you get the first minister, say farmers aren't going to tell him where he spent the money, what the point of a consultation? These are the things that are aggravating and frustrating people. Yeah, there's a few good things in it, don't get me wrong, but we have to look at every single farm individually. And to be blanketing a country with one scheme fits all, I don't think it's right. I really don't think it's right. And what, you know, meets for my neighbour next door will not be for me. And we farm very, very similar, but he could fit into quite a few brackets that I wouldn't. So all these things are important. And yeah, more than happy to talk with anybody. That's my whole ethos. You know, people are making it political. People are trying to throw, you know, curveballs as he's a right-wing extremist. He's a zero bloody denier and all these things. Look, I'm a farmer, firm foremost. You know, I'm a father of three. I'm a husband to one. I love my life. I'm very fortunate. I could walk away from this tomorrow and never have to work again. But that's not the point, you know. It's never about the money. It's never about the fame, it's about the future. And if people can understand that we are here as farmers for you, you know, because without you, we wouldn't have work. Without you buying our products, there wouldn't be no point. But we have to make sure that you understand that we need you to support us. So come together, make sure that we can find these solutions going forward to build a better Britain on our bellies. And I think we do need a farming food revolution. And that's not just in this country, but worldwide. People start to really understand wasting less food, you know, understanding that we use every single bit of the animal, you know, and whatever your dietary requirements are, or your dietary beliefs, there will be a farmer behind that somewhere. And it's scary when you see some of these big multinational corporations coming in with some of the, you know, the processed food. And they're the ones maybe that are putting pressure, lobbying with a lot of cash behind the scenes. I don't know. I'm just thinking. But, you know, we have to have a farmer. We have to have them farmers. And the family farms in Wales are the beating hearts of our community. And it would be a great shame to lose them.